This is Roland Chidiac Connects, a podcast about motivation and inspiration. Ever wonder what drives people to do what they do? Join me as I connect with a variety of people who have great stories to tell about what inspires them, ignites their passions, and leads them to make a difference in their work and the people around them. This is episode 43 of Roland Chidiac Connects, a podcast about motivation and inspiration. And I'm fortunate enough to tell you that this evening I get to chat with Dean Shoresky. Currently, Dean is the community manager for Discovery Education Canada, and he's going to tell us a little bit about what he does there and what that exactly means. But before that, he was a digital learning consultant, and then before that, he was a teacher in the classroom for 14 years, and he's all about the use of technology in the classroom. And I'm not going to say too much more because I really want Dean to tell us about that connection and how he got into that. So, Dean, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no problem. So tell us, what does a community manager for Discovery Education Canada do?
Well, I've been doing it for just over 5 years, and I'm still trying to figure out exactly what I do. And I say that it's sort of a catch-all for everything from sort of evangelism for Discovery, but really Discovery at its core, beyond the services that we provide. And for those that aren't really even sure what the connection, we're part of the Discovery Communications, Discovery Channel. So that's how most people associate us with. And we work with schools across Canada, the U.S. and the world, really providing, high quality digital resources and instructional strategies for teachers, and work at, usually at the district level, but occasionally, and then, that works down to teachers and classrooms. But the community part is really at the core of what we do. And so our tagline, if you will, is connecting educators to their most valuable resource, which is each other, which I know that's your name of your podcast is Roland Connect. So any way that we can bring people together and help them learn from one another and facilitate that through our products and services, but also through the events that we do and through informal and formal connections. So there's a myriad of ways that we do that. But, with our partnerships across Canada, we just try to nurture those folks and really help them, expand their networks, if you will. And so not only do they connect with the products and services that we offer, but we really want them to connect with other people. So that's somewhat connection of what I do.
Well, I like that, connecting educators to each other. It's awesome. I think we need to do more of that because working in silos is just not effective anymore, and it's not helping the kids. And so I think connecting educators to each other is obviously going to benefit everyone. How did you get into this line of work? Like, I know I'm assuming that you retired from a district as a digital learning consultant, but I could be wrong. How did you get into this role?
Yeah, you're wrong. So I was in my 23rd year, I guess, of being in education. As you mentioned, I was in the classroom for 14 and the 9, just working at the district level, when Discovery approached me. They had a lot of success. Discovery Education in the U.S. was a very thriving entity, and we were just beginning our work in Canada, and they did not really have that sense of community. And so I was fortunate enough to be approached and in many respects was able to write my own job description. I was beginning to get some notoriety in the larger ed tech community. I was doing some speaking, sort of on my own, and had some, was becoming a bit known, I guess. And so they wanted to be able to sort of use what I had, the skills that I had there and the skills that I had from my district. And they didn't really have a specific, they just said, we want to hire you. And Discovery is really good about, just let's find good people and then we'll figure out where to put them later. So I was definitely fortunate to be to do that. So originally I just said, well, this sounds like a really interesting opportunity. I'm not ready to retire. So I ended up taking a leave from my school district for actually 2 years, you know, under the, you know, sort of trial of let's see if this works for both parties. And it definitely did. And so after those 2 years, I just had to resign from my school district and have been continuing discovery ever since.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, the only other person that tells me I'm wrong often is my wife. So you're in good company. I wanted to talk a little bit for a second about Twitter. I know that you're an avid user of Twitter, and I know that you talk education on Twitter, but also from time to time, you joke around and you talk about other things. And something that was really cool for me before I connected with you to talk on the podcast was when I read your Twitter profile, it was really cool because at the end of your profile, you have a link to a video where you briefly talk about, you know, basically if people have discovered you on Twitter and they're either following you or not, they can click on this link and they'll go to this video where you basically talk about, welcome to following me on Twitter. These are the things I'm about. This is what I do. So if you want to keep following me, great. And if you don't, that's cool too. And I thought that was really awesome. And I'm, you know, it's not a very complicated thing what you did, but it sure seemed innovative to me. I've never seen that before. And I thought it was really awesome that people were able to, like, well, I was following you anyway, so it wasn't going to change my mind, but I thought it was really cool that you make that available for people where they can see you right away, they can hear you right away, and they can hear what you're about, and then move from there in terms of either connecting with you further or not. And I thought it was really cool. Is that something that came to you on your own, or is that something you had seen somewhere along the way?
Well, no, it did come to me on my own. What I was taking advantage for a while, if this, then that, was allowing people, every time someone followed you, it could send them a direct message basically saying that. Then they pulled that away. I see that actually that looks like that's back in play. I see people, I get them now. And I'm not sure how I feel about them now because I'm partially somewhat annoyed, I guess, when I get these direct messages that are, you know, just sort of generic, thank you for following me, here's my link. And it comes across sometimes as a bit, I don't know, a bit salesy. So I haven't reenacted it, but I had it set up for a while. And the reason that I did, you know, I am an early user of Twitter. I started using Twitter in 2007, and there were not very many educators using that tool. And it was really, really an exploration of, let's see what this tool does. I mean, and there's lots of tools that come out now where, you know, people are just trying to figure out, is there value in this? And so there's no particularly educational people. It was just like, okay, here's a tool that's basically, the prompt was, what are you doing? You know, that was the prompt back in the day. And so, you know, and you know, Twitter, it's not so much anymore, but you know, it would typically get the criticism in broader society of like, who sound, which is what people were doing, right? Because is this tool? What are we supposed to do with it? And so, and in those early times, that was really powerful for me because it was, and it continues to be, a way that I get to meet new people, and people sort of let their guard down because they didn't know what the tool was. So they would try anything, right? Like they would share goofy things or whatever. And I just found that interesting. And for me, you know, in general, through blogging and through other places, the whole idea of connecting with other people to me is at its core is a human thing. And whenever you meet somebody, and I don't care if you meet somebody in your place of work or at an event or wherever, we typically start with, you know, social kinds of things, right? Did you watch the game yesterday? You know, what's the weather like? What are your hobbies? All of those things that are not related to your profession and your work, you know, and we grow to develop that. And as Twitter became more and more of a phenomena, especially among educators, it was starting really quickly. And I see this with lots of new tools, right? No matter what, when Snapchat comes out, no matter what the tool is, there's like about 4 seconds of, hey, this is interesting, until somebody writes the first blog post that says, using Snapchat in the classroom, using Twitter in the classroom, which I don't know, it often seems like premature, and it often sort of is skipping a step. And to me, that step was, how about we just get to know one each other? Like, and I've never felt that Twitter is a great vehicle for really deep and important conversations. And I've blogged about that before. Discuss, you know, go somewhere else, do a podcast, have a blog, like have something where you can actually take the was it's 100 and it is and I like that people hack a tool, I don't mind that, but I just really felt like it was important for me to say I'm not as interested in using this tool for deep educational conversations. And so that video was and has been my attempt to say for you know, for new people that listen, this is how I'm going to use the tool. If you're just joining Twitter because you want great links to, you know, resources or, you know, find the news or have some, you know, inspirational quotes, that's not my primary purpose. Not to, again, it doesn't say that I never engage in those kinds of conversations. I do from time to time, but I really think that Twitter's best value for me anyways is in the pure social, just getting to know people. You know, and I'm fortunate with my job, I travel around, so I go to a new city and I know people because I've interacted with them on Twitter and I go out for dinner with them, and then I have really great discussions about pedagogy and instruction and teaching and school and the whole thing. But that's not where Twitter really strength for me is anyways.
Well, I love the video, and I think for me, because I'm on the same wavelength as you in terms of using Twitter to make connections with people. I mean, it's great to find resources and to see things that I might not see anywhere else, but the number one thing is connecting with people, building like a rapport or relationship, even though it sounds kind of silly, it's not once you get into it. And I know you understand what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And that's when I talk to people about Twitter, it's funny because I start with the resources and this and this and this. And then I call it going deep, where I talk about, I actually like make connections with people that I can seek out for assistance, or they can seek me out. Right. And then sometimes it's just back and forth about baseball games. It's nothing to do with our work. So, I'm totally with you on that. You seem like a very passionate person, the way you talk about teaching and how you got into your work, the way you use Twitter, you seem to really go deep with it. I'd love to hear what generally motivates you.
Motivates me. Yeah. You know, I think for the most part, what motivates me is, like my wife is a teacher. She's still teaching. And, you know, I work with educators, as I said, across Canada and the US. And I really have I'm really overprotective, if you will, of teachers. I feel like in general, the teaching profession is not as respected as it ought to be. I think that it is one of the most difficult jobs to do well that I know of. And you know, and again, that I haven't done a lot of other professions, so it's hard to say. But I will say this, that going from spending 14 years in a classroom to 9 at a district and now my job, I never worked harder, had more challenging work in many respects as when I was actually in a classroom with kids. You know, and I've even blogged about that before, that's the hardest job. And I know people don't like me to sort of draw that line in the sand, you know, administrators and other people, even people that do my work will say, hey, our jobs are hard too. A different kind of hard. Yeah, it is. But I think that the other part of that job is that, I mean, I get an inordinate amount of praise for just doing my job. I mean, people are so gracious, you know, I'll go somewhere and speak and they'll be so thankful or whatever, right? People, I'm really fortunate and I have that kind of a job. Teachers, I mean, how few times do they get really thanked for their job? It just doesn't happen. And so that sort of, I want to be the champion, if you will, for teachers. I want to kind of do everything I can to care for them. And so when we go to a district, you know, I'm excited to, you know, do something on their behalf, whether that means, you know, going into a classroom and writing a blog post about the awesome things I've seen, you know, going out for dinner with some folks, just gifting them with some new ideas, whatever it is. Like, my motivation is I know how hard it is to be a teacher. And if I can be a little bit of support for those folks, then I feel like that's a worthwhile use of my time.
Thank you for saying that about teachers. I agree with you on that. It's a very difficult job, and to do it well makes it a lot more difficult. And I feel the same. They're not thanked enough as they should be. So they're going to love hearing what you just said. When do you think that the respect for teachers that used to exist dropped off? In your opinion, like, when do you think this happened?
Yeah, I think it's sort of all, and again, it's easy to be nostalgic about things. I think probably the whole change in society, and again, without going too deep into the world today, but I think everybody is pretty much in agreement that, you know, for better or for worse, teachers were just respected as they're more authoritative. They have more education than the average person does. And so when you sent your kid to school, at least when I was a child, you know, teachers were rarely questioned publicly around the work that they did. Now, that doesn't say that doing all, but there was a general, I think, respect amongst the fact that, hey, these are learned people. We're entrusting our kids with them, and we want our kids to behave and do well. And today I would say that persona or that belief is not there. In many cases, it's, you know, lots of questioning teachers, society thinks of everything from politicians to police officers, to anybody with authority, right? There's more of questioning it. And there's an element of that that's very good, right? That's healthy, that we don't just take what authority says as being. But the downside to that is, if you're a teacher in particular, is that now you are being questioned a lot more. And that just makes the job, it can make the job more difficult. So whether there was a, you know, I don't think there's a point in time, but I think people just sort of understand the shift in society around the way we think of authority, and teachers typically were people of authority, and I just don't think they're seen in that light anymore.
Yeah, the reason why I asked that question is because, well, I thought that you might say something about the fact that we can find almost any kind of information we want on the internet takes away the teacher's power of the one to know everything, or the one to go to learn from. So I just wanted to see if that maybe was your thought. Anyway, I appreciate your response to that question. When I was reading your blog, I was reading the About Me page, and like you, I like to check out the About pages so I can see, you know, what I'm getting myself into and who I'm dealing with. But when I was reading yours, in preparation to speak to you this evening, I really enjoyed the part about you taking the time to immerse yourself in the understanding of the internet and about how it shapes knowledge and changes how people learn. And something you said there really struck a chord with me. It was basically your belief that teachers and students should be using technology to connect ideas and learners in a safe, relevant, and authentic way. And I thought that was key, because school should be a place where we can engage our students and each other in safe, relevant, and authentic ways. Can you tell me when this philosophy kind of kicked in for you throughout your career?
Well, I think for me, again, there's a lot of sort of seminal moments for me where I, you know, lights kind of went on, and then, you know, continued to journey down that path. But I mean, there's a couple of, I think I can point to people and ideas that really resonated with me. One early on was a Dave Weinberger, who wrote a couple of books that I really liked. One is Everything is Miscellaneous. The other one is called Too Big to Know. And those are books that really deal with the changing nature of information, right? The fact that, you know, when information is digital, when information is everywhere, How does that change? So those are sort of bigger kind of philosophical books that help me think about knowledge differently. And then, you know, people like Will Richardson have been really impactful for me, as being somebody that's, you know, my contemporary and, you know, was doing similar work that I was, and I've been able to work with Will, in a few different capacities, just really continuing to challenge, the role of school. And so all of those things, you know, start you on the path of saying, okay, there's something really interesting for us to explore here. And, you know, when I think back to the way that technology was introduced into schools, it really was at this level of if you take the SAMR model, the substitution level, right, is just let's just use this to continue schooling the way we've always done that. And I was just fascinated by the fact that, wait, what if there was a different way, and how can we explore the affordances? And I think that's, to me, was a really sort of jump-started my career again after I left. Even our classroom began to think about technology really has some really interesting uses. And for me, you know, one of those interesting uses early on was the use of video. You know, I was using video in the classroom in the 90s when it was very, very awkward and difficult. But I still felt like the potential of this to communicate and tell stories was something that we needed to be doing with our kids. And so, when I talk about doing something in a safe, relevant, and authentic, like, that's a great example of, you know, there was no, like, yeah, digital means that it costs you nothing. You can do it as a million times. It doesn't matter. And so there's very little risk involved with that. And then, you know, the idea of making it relevant and authentic, I think the idea of relevancy really comes when you think about, addressing the whole nature of curriculum in general. Like why are the standards and outcomes and expectations that are listed in curriculums, what makes them so important when they're essentially, you know, one millionth of the possible things you could learn and do? And so, being able to sort of find your own path when it comes to learning through the internet, through those tools, really was, you know, a move towards relevancy. And authentic is a challenging term. I guess to me, authentic means, you know, something that really actually matters, like making something that it's not only something you're passionate about, but it actually is like a real and useful thing. And so, you know, going back to the idea of video, like making something for someone else that's actually going to be used and not just, you know, like typical schoolwork used to be. It was done and then thrown in the garbage when it was done. So, there's a lot of, those are the kinds of people and the kind of ideas that I think just sort of are the foundation of what I do. But, you know, certainly there's, you know, tons of other people and ideas that have continued to influence my thinking.
Mm-hmm. You also said that learning needs to be fun, okay, and personal. And I'm getting that from you know, your explanation that you just provided us with. But, and this, I'm making a connection here because in 2016, you published a book called Embracing Cultures of Joy. So that book, is that connected to the stuff that you just talked about and the fact that you truly believe that learning needs to be personal, individualized, and fun?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that book was sort of written out of, again, a strong philosophy that really started with the idea of, you know, is learning actually a joyful act? Is it something that we actually would say is joyful? And we know that the reputation of school in general terms is that, from students, is that school sucks. I mean, that's what that narrative has been. That's generalizing. There's lots of examples where it doesn't. But if you ask, you know, the average kid or the average, even there's this drudgery that comes to school, and that is challenging some of the language and some of the really try. Let's strip away school. Let's strip away you know, the educational system that we have. And let's just think about learning as a human endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
Thing, right? It, you know, if you look at children before they go to school, everything they learn is this joyful experience, and they do it because they need to do it. You know, even if you look at reading, for example, you know, if you look at kids who learn how to read before they go to school, in almost every case, it's not because somebody sat down with them and showed them flashcards or taught them phonics or anything else. It's people doing it, and people who are readers, the people that read to them, and you know, were involved in the company that they kept, and it was and is a joyful thing. And so, how do we take that idea of saying that's learning in its purest form? And there's also this you know, part of what I challenge is the mindset that says learning has to be hard. You know, learning is always this challenging thing. Like we talk about, you know, again, the flavor of the day is failure. We need to embrace failure. Continues to paint a picture that most learning is really, really hard. And I would argue that most of the things we learn is actually not hard. There are some things that are hard, and we tend to focus on those hard things. But for the most part, you know, most of us learn things that are very enjoyable, and we like it, right? We hit a roadblock along the way. So, you know, whether you're learning to play guitar or cooking or whatever, most of it's yeah, okay, I'm into it, I love it. And then you hit a part where, oh, this is more difficult than I thought. But overall, I don't think characterizing learning as this really difficult thing is what we should do. I think we should focus on the fact that it's really exciting and joyful. Let's begin with that. And when we get to the hard parts, we'll deal with that. And we will, yes, embrace the failures that come with that. But by starting off, you know, with the idea that, hey, kids, school is going to be this awful thing. It's going to be really hard. You're going to have to really... you know, ourselves up for success when that's the way we paint the picture. And so it's going to be great. You're going to love it for the most part. And when the times get tough, we'll figure out, and those are important parts of the learning too, but that's not the dominant way in which we should describe learning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Was it difficult for you to put that book together?
Yes and no. You know, and I was again approached by Solution Tree to write it. So I wasn't looking to write a book, but they thought, hey, you might have an idea here. And so for me, it was a challenge. And again, before I wrote the book, not really, there were times where it was difficult, but I mean, it was a process where I'd blogged for years. Right. And I, even in the preface of my book, I state, you know, that I'm used to writing for me, and I'm used to writing with, you know, ending sentences and prepositions. I'm used to doing it the way I want to do it because it's my blog, and I'd never done it, you know, in this kind of, you know, and you know, since the last time I wrote an academic paper in my master's class, I never had anybody really, you know, had to write in a way for somebody else. So that was good for me to challenge that. I enjoyed the challenge of it, but I mean, I think, you know, trying to figure out what I thought was important to say in the context of a book was, you know, something that made me think. But overall, I don't know if I would say it was really hard. It was something, yeah, I enjoyed that stuff. And it's good for it. You know, for me, that's why blogging is so powerful, is that you get to articulate your thoughts and have them recorded. I mean, I use my blog all the time as a, you know, as a memory bank for me, saying, I think I wrote about this one time, or I think I researched this one time. And so it for me, it's a powerful archive of my thinking. And so the book was in some respects kind of a continuation of that, but just with a little different twist.
Mm-hmm. That's what you just said is basically the reason why I started my blog many years ago. It was about documenting my growth and kind of recording the things I was working with my kids and how they were turning out. And I remember I feel like it was just yesterday when somebody said to me, why are you doing this? Like, who's going to read your blog? And my response was, it's not for other people. It's for me. And if other people if they stumble across it, or if they ask me about a topic that, like you, you know, I think, hey, I think I wrote about that, I can always refer them to a place online that they can go to whenever they want, and they can kind of check it out, and then they can communicate with me about it, and we can hash it out. But that really resonates with me, because, and I do enjoy being able to write the way I want to write on my blog. Anything goes, right? Because it's my blog. So I totally get it. The last major thing I wanna ask you about, because I know you've got to get going in a little bit. It's another motivation question, but it has to do with what you might say to someone else who sought you out for motivation. So I know you go around speaking, and your work takes you all over Canada and into the United States. So if and when you come across an educator who connects with you and tells you, you know, like, I'm just not feeling motivated, what might you say to that person to help them find motivation or inspiration?
That's a good question. It's a tough one. You know, I guess the one thing that I've talked a lot about lately, and it's actually in the book too, as a chapter, is finding your unfair advantage, and that phrase comes from a podcast I listened to a couple years ago called Startup, and the podcast is a series documenting the rise of a new company. And mm-hmm. in one of the episodes, they're looking for investors, and they're meeting with a venture capitalist and trying to explain, you know, here's my business plan and here's how this is going to work. And finally, the investor says to this guy, I don't care about that. I want to know what your unfair advantage is. Like, what is it that uniquely you that I should invest in? And mm-hmm. And he went on to talk about his passion around that business and what he brought to the table. And I've been asking that question to educators about your unfair advantage. Like, what is it that makes you you? And I feel like, you know, teachers thinking about their own, you know, their own passions and their own uniqueness, you know. So if you are one who... you know, loves motorcycles, for example. That's your thing. Well, how can you bring that into the classroom, right? And I don't care what you teach, if you teach mathematics or you teach kindergarten or whatever. Like, how do you help relate your passions? Because again, one of the best gifts you can give your students is the gift of learning. Like showing them what learning is, and when you're mm-hmm. talking about your passion, that's what you're talking about, right? Like, you're growing in your passion for motorcycles. And, you know, all the things you've learned about motorcycles over the years and figuring out how to connect with your students on that. Not because every kid in your class is going to love motorcycles, but because they want to see what you're like as a learner, and they want to see what you're mm-hmm. passionate about. And that's the sustainability of and the gift that you give your kids. The gift you give your kids isn't because you teach them chemistry or because you taught them how to read. The gift is that because you're a model for them, and they're spending time with you, and they get to. You know, watch you, because as you mentioned before, you know, the knowledge part of this game is over. I mean, selling facts for is not part of what schools do anymore. That business is gone. But mm-hmm. what business remains is the fact that you've got caring, passionate adults who can influence kids long after their time with them. And it comes so when someone says they're just not motivated, I it's a simplistic answer because you could be a lot of reasons why, but you know, that is one of the things that I think, again, in my sort of guardianship of teachers and wanting them to be well and healthy, I think that teachers who are well and healthy feel very good about sharing who they are and what they're passionate about with their students and giving them that gift. And that's the thing they're never going to forget. Like, they're going to remember the thing you love because you talked about it a lot and you helped not just talk about it for the sake of that, but you broadened it to, and you can take your passions and learn about them in this way and, you know, have the successes around those passions. So, asking teachers to be more them and less about trying to fit in with other things, I think, is the message I would often give folks.
Right on. Thank you for sharing that. Be more of you. I love it. Dean, if people want to connect with you, how can they do that?
Well, a myriad of ways. I mean, I'm on all of the social spaces. I'm a Twitter user. I'm a blogger. So Shoresky, my last name, is, you can find me on Twitter. And again, I warn people, it may not be your taste, and it's fine. There's a lot of room for lots of folks on there. So, but that's one place. My blog, ideasandthoughts.org, is where I probably blog there twice a month or so. I write there, and email or Instagram or Facebook or Snapchat or whatever. I play around in all those spaces, so I let people decide where they want to connect with me, and for the most part, I'm kind of in those spaces, and I'm always happy to extend conversations with people in whatever way they choose.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for your time. I really appreciate it. It's been great talking to you and kind of hearing your story and what you're about. And I hope people do hit you up on one of those many social media platforms that you're connected with. So thanks again, and enjoy the rest of your evening.